This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 22nd of December 2009, and joining me on the line once again is Greg Nicoletos of WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com. Greg Nicoletos is not only one of the leading experts on the technological control grid that's being slotted into place around us, but he's also the leader and founder of WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped, the world's first organized international movement against the transhumanist agenda. Greg, it is awesome to have you back on the program, and thank you very much for joining me here.
Much appreciated, James. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, as I say, you have been on the program before, but for those listeners who may be hearing your voice for the first time, why don't you just give us the brief synopsis about your background?
Basically, I come from an IT background. I've worked for Apple and Xerox, so I'm very much pro-technology, but there has come a time now when, as our view of where technology is actually moving and the evolution of technology, it's got to a point now where, you know, it is becoming sinister, and there are agendas at play, obviously, amongst, you know, large multinational companies to basically control certain aspects of our lives. So I guess that was one of the areas, of course, once the microchip actually came out, which actually birthed the We the People Will Not Be Chipped movement, which is a movement which is obviously primarily focused against human inventorying, but at the same time we also do cover, you know, emerging technologies, you know, such as biometrics, radio frequency ID, nanotech and so forth. So you have all these converging trends, and realistically where technology is going, regardless of which area you're looking at, the one common denominator I see in it all is basically, you know, the erosion of civil liberties and less rights for the human being. So that's it in a nutshell from our movement's perspective anyway.
Well, that's right, and you raise some good points there, because We the People Will Not Be Chipped, of course, the chipped refers to things like Verichip and those types of technologies, but obviously the website and the movement is about much, much more than that. It's about a very broad agenda, and I certainly wholeheartedly encourage people to go and take a look at WeThePeopleNotBeChipped.com, which is a treasure trove of information on all sorts of things, from RFID to the microchip implants to transhumanism, all sorts of information on a vast array of subjects. So definitely people should check that out. And before we start getting into today's topic, I'd actually just like to take a moment to let the listeners know that anyone out there who's been appreciating ClimateGate.tv should really be ultimately thanking Greg Nicoletos, because he was in fact the one who registered the domain name and transferred it over to me so I could start the website. And
exactly.
Before he did that, yeah, I must admit, I didn't even think of starting a website. I wasn't even a thought in my mind until you did that. So,
oh, actually,
I can't thank you enough.
When I actually went to, you know, the registration domain and it just had climategate.tv available, you just, it's almost like winning a mini lotto but without any money.
It really is, and I think that it's awesome, but it's also a case point lesson for the listeners out there on strategic ways to position ourselves in the online media market, as it were. I mean, when these types of words and phrases pop up, they suddenly become hot domain names and hot territory on the internet, and certainly by striking early and striking well with something like ClimateGate.tv, I mean, that's an incredible domain name to have. So, once again, hats off to you for coming up with that and getting it done.
Hats off in actually taking the domain and making it work, so it's all good. Thanks, James.
All right, excellent. Well, okay, so let's talk today. I wanted to talk about a specific aspect of the technological control grid, as I call it, which, as we say, talks about a number of different technologies and things, which are all interconnected in various ways. But today I want to focus specifically on DNA, because as I'm sure my listeners are aware, in multiple countries around the world right now, there is a concerted effort taking place to collect people's DNA under a whole bunch of different programs and projects and police actions, all sorts of different ways that our DNA is being collected and harvested, and to what end is this happening is ultimately where I think this conversation might lead. But first, let's just sort of document some of the ways in which this is happening. So, Greg, you have the floor. Why don't you break down some of the things that people are doing and the ways that DNA is being extracted from the people right now?
I'll give you some real cases. And look, this is a global phenomena. So when you actually track the trends, I mean, you know, this is an agenda that is being played out with systematic precision. So whether you're looking at Ireland or Italy or, you know, Botswana, Malaysia, the UK, which is obviously one of the major advocates for it, I can give you some real world examples of what is actually happening in Australia, where, and the databases that we have out here, which is actually controlled by a company called CrimTrack, our databases are basically nearly full. We're actually looking at actually extending and enlarging the size of the actual database. So how they actually do it, it's a case of, you know, now, you know, generally police, when, you know, to extract DNA, you would really have to be either prosecuted, or there would good reason that for the DNA to actually be requested from you, that, you know, you basically have either committed a crime or you have actually been charged with a crime. Where we stand in Australia, something as simple as jaywalking actually now gives the police the right, and this is within, you know, within the laws, it is actually passed through Parliament. And it's always shrouded within, you know, the terror legislation. So utilizing the same old Trojan horse, if, for example, you know, myself, I went to an actual protest or to a rally, the police have got these wide sweeping powers that can they basically, you know, extract one's, you know, have a saliva swab or the like, to the point now where, you know, a policeman can really do it at will. But more than that, not they can only do it at will, but they also have the legislation and the power to actually do it, where from a civil liberties perspective, you really have no leg to stand on. And it's gotten even worse. In my state, for example, the government has actually handed out swab kits to the actual bus drivers. So, you know, the bus drivers that actually drive the Queensland state buses have actually been given DNA test kits. So if any commuter is actually spitting as part of their role as a bus driver, it is their duty to then go collect the spit, which then ends up on a database. So, I mean, you know, it's really out of control. But as mentioned, James, I mean, this is the same case, you know, in Ireland. You know, Italy has basically, you know, just recently established a DNA database. You have the, you know, European Union, which has basically asked for a common DNA data bank across the whole of Europe. So it is a global phenomena. But what I can say in our country specifically, we have at least 500,000 people on the actual database in a population of only 20 million. So the, you know, the reach and the penetration is just massive, absolutely massive, and getting worse.
Absolutely. And how could it not get worse with things like bus drivers collecting spit? I mean, that's just incredible. And it's the type of thing that 20 years ago would have been a Twilight Zone episode. It would have been science fiction, yeah. But to be living through this right now, it's just, it makes you wonder how people could be sleeping through this, the implementation of this agenda.
And you know, that's the whole point, is this whole compartmentalization that occurs where, you know, I mean, I haven't had the chance to actually, you know, communicate with an actual bus driver, but the question then becomes is, you know, all these people who are basically doing the bidding of the government at the end of the day, they're the ones that are pulling this whole grid into place. Because if the bus drivers and, or, you know, I'm not sure how the union perspective works within, you know, the transport system over here, but surely that becomes, you know, an area where a bus driver's, you know, occupation since when does that extend to actually, you know, extracting DNA samples that will end up on a database that could actually be housed by a private corporation? And, you know, they might say that it fits under the criteria and such that is being put forward through by the government and the regulations, that it meets all the standards. The fact is, what people need to realise is where DNA and all this harvesting is basically going. It is about genetic determinism, which is the fact of where eugenics will rise to the surface again, where they'll say, look, what we're doing is we're basically mapping a person's genome so we can eradicate the bad genes. And when you're approaching it from that particular angle, I have spoken to some experts in the vaccine field where they said this will be the rebirth of the vaccine movement. So currently the vaccine movement is having a lot of, you know, problems with, you know, the, you know, formaldehyde and, you know, all the other additives and so forth. I mean, I'm not an expert in that field. But once you actually start mapping the genome and then you start proposing that to a world market and say, look, we can actually tailor vaccines to your genetic code, you will actually see the vaccine movement and big pharma basically have a big kick and really repolishing with the new veneer the vaccine movement. So that is where it's moving as well. So it's not only the one area we basically are, you know, having ourselves put onto databases with, you know, the biometric mark of the DNA, you know, supposedly being more robust than, you know, your iris scan or your fingerprint. But there are also other agendas coming from Big Pharma as well.
Right, and exactly as all of the other aspects of this technological control grid are always introduced in a manner that they're going to be for our benefit, so too is this DNA. Oh, it's going to be tailoring vaccines directly for your genetic code. And of course, all of these things are, you know, potentially wonderful breakthroughs and amazing scientific things that truly could benefit humanity, but it's always the question of who is implementing it and why are they doing it. And obviously, that does go back to an agenda which you just brought up, eugenics, which of course is a very, very old agenda, but is becoming more and more sophisticated. And I guess it's been so long since it's been in the regular parlance and vernacular that most people generally don't even know what it is, let alone how to look out for it. So why don't we start to break down a little bit what eugenics is and how that might relate to the current DNA collection agenda?
Yeah, I mean, what it comes down to is, and how you're actually seeing, you know, eugenics resurfacing, basically, it'll be called the genomic science, if you like. So once the human genome is sequenced, and you have, I think off the top of my head, 6 countries now that have fully sequenced the genome, the major driver is to basically get the cost down of full sequencing to as low a cost as possible. So the only thing now that is preventing governments from actually mandating that DNA becomes a biometric marker, which will in the future, is once the genome can actually be sequenced for about $100, let's say hypothetically, and IBM is actually driving the charge on this as well with the DNA array, which is just on the horizon. So what people need to realize is, look, it took $6 billion roughly to fully sequence the first genome, and now they're throwing figures around like $1,000 down to $600, and it is possible we can get it down to $100. So once we get it down to $100 and then we roll it into security, you know, fighting against terror, you know, this is a new biometric marker that is safer than your iris scan, safer than your fingerprint, safer than your gait, right, because it is your DNA. But then what people don't realise, it is probably the least safe biometric marker, because everywhere you go, you're basically shedding DNA, whether it's from, you know, your hair, from your skin and the like. So and to go off track, the point is behind this is every biometric marker that is actually being proposed can actually be cloned, and it's not bulletproof. I mean, the Humabio project has actually gone on record where it's an EU-funded project that have actually said, look, we need to move to internal biometrics because they're a lot safer and cannot be cloned. And by internal biometrics, I mean brain scans and actual heart rhythms. So they're already telling us, look, you know, biometrics can actually be cloned. So when you look at DNA, it is probably the least safest biometric marker for the simple fact that, you know, people are shedding DNA the whole time. So going back one step, the point behind it is that this is very much a Trojan horse. So it's a case of, like you said, you know, if we can cure multiple sclerosis, you know, if we can isolate the genes for cancer, if we can isolate the genes for Alzheimer's, if we can isolate the genes for et cetera, what you're really doing is you're repackaging and rebranding eugenics, where you'll have this top elite field basically dictating or mandating, for example, and saying, look, along with actually, you know, protecting the country and having a safe biometric marker such as your DNA, we can also then sequence your genome and then see whether you'll actually be a burden to society and whether you have got a predisposition to Alzheimer's or to bipolar or to, excuse me, or to any other diseases that Big Pharma just decides to make up. So, for example, myself, I was classified as a child who had, you know, ADHD at school. And, you know, from the research I've done, I don't actually believe the disease does even exist. It's just a case of I've gone on and forged my life without being on Ritalin. So there you go.
Exactly. And that's a key point, because even if we were to assume that this biometric agenda and the DNA collection agenda was being instituted for people's benefit, we would have to be wary of the fact that one day in the future, there may just be some person or some group or some corporation that comes along to try to use this for a money-making scam, if nothing else, which I don't think we'd have to go too far on a limb to imagine. And absolutely, just as they invent diseases in order to market pharmaceuticals to us to cure those diseases, exactly the same way they can invent diseases to eradicate from the gene pool. And if they declare that this certain genetic marker or whatever is a disease and it needs to be eradicated and you have it, what happens in that situation, and who are we ceding that power to when we suddenly decide that our entire society needs to be structured based on our
exactly
genetics?
And hypothetically, imagine, I mean, and let's just go totally out on a limb here. Hypothetically, imagine they isolate the gene or the specific gene which is related to strong free will, the questioning of authority, and the basis that I have inalienable human rights. Hypothetically, let's say they actually mapped that particular gene, and then as we move into this global war on terror, do I then become a person who has got this gene? Because, you know, based on the work that I'm covering, well, does Greg Nicolaitis then basically need to have this gene either modified or eradicated, or, you know, what is the remedy to fix me, to basically fit me into this system that they are basically working tirelessly towards? So this has many repercussions, and because, you know, genome sequencing at the end of the day is just, you know, it's a field in itself. I mean, even defendants against DNA, for example, so if you have, you know, a DNA case coming up within, with the defendant and the prosecution, quite often the defendants will basically say, look, you know, it is very difficult to actually argue against DNA evidence because how it is presented in the marketplace, it is really presented as, you know, this bulletproof biometric marker that you really can't argue against. But there was an article that actually came out probably about 3 weeks ago where I think it was the Israeli Special Forces, I mean, people can actually Google it, basically showcased how DNA can actually be cloned and actual crime scenes set up specifically to make innocent people be guilty. So it's far from it. It's just one other biometric marker that can basically be cloned.
That's exactly right. You know, and if I could just interject for 1 second, that's actually on WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com report. Israeli scientists discover way to counterfeit DNA, first biometrics, then DNA can be cloned. Chipping will be proposed as the solution after this.
Exactly. And look, that's what it is. It's a case of if we look at 10 years ago on the biometric harvest, it is a case of we'll move to what's called multimodal a biometric system where you basically could have up to, 5 to 6 biometric markers just to get you through, through choke points, whether it's through airports. I mean, the last time I was in the States and, I've got certain lines in the sand as well, but at the end of the day, I have to travel either for business or for the movement. But the fact is, my iris scan was taken at a checkpoint, and then my fingerprints are now basically within the lovely US government system. So the point becomes it's just this gradual move and, the whole boiling the frog analogy where, they're just conditioning us to the next move where the next biometric marker fails, and then once that one fails, a new one is proposed, and then once that one fails, it is a gradual move towards the microchip society.
Well, that's right. I mean, it is the boiling frog analogy, which we've all heard, but I don't know if I'm just an unusual frog, but for me, it just seems that the agenda is moving so quickly now, and things that were truly unthinkable, even when I was a child, are now truly happening in our society, that I look around and wonder why aren't more people reacting to this. But I mean, even things like the implantable microchip now seriously being instituted as a means of identification, as a means of storing personal information. I mean, that was the type of thing of nightmare science fiction when I was growing up, and now it is here. So I can't imagine how people aren't seeing that.
I'll tell you the comical thing about it, James, is, we have a Facebook group and, we have about 3,000 members, and there's another group out there which is People Against Clowns, I think it was. So the group that is against clowns, as in, like clowns with, red noses and angry clowns, has got, I think, 96,000 members. And our group, which is, Mankind versus Verichip, I mean, to the point where, I mean, what is more degrading than basically being reduced to inventory and like livestock? And, the growth rate of our movement, although it is good, I think for most people it's just too serious, and people cannot handle the truth. But more than that, because they can't handle the truth and actually see what is coming down the line to humanity, it is a case of, people get what they deserve in a sense. So it's we can only do so much as a movement, but like you said, the frustration on my part, especially when, I spend a lot of time on the website, dissecting information, presenting it out there, and, to the people that do follow the movement, I truly appreciate, all your effort and the like, but the complacency, I sometimes want to get to the bottom of it where I think to myself, is it fluoride in the water? Is it TV? I mean, what is it that has made so many people just switch off and just not care? It's to me, I just can't understand it for the life of me. Well, I feel like an alien sometimes.
Absolutely. It does seem like, I keep going back to it, but it seems like a Twilight Zone episode where you wake up one day and you're normal, but everyone else is strange. And that's what it feels like sometimes, where everyone else is just accepting these types of things happening in our society. Yeah. I can't imagine why people aren't railing against it. But to put this into perspective for people, I think one of the ways in which this type of technology is introduced to our society and these types of ideas are gradually inculcated in us is by using terminology and fields of study that don't seem related to threats to our species. So, for example, there are people who are historically literate who will know that eugenics is a bad thing, and it equals Nazi race science, and it was the philosophy which helped, I guess, make the Holocaust possible from an ideological perspective, and people have been trained, I guess, who actually understand the history to beware of eugenics, but we don't have that same problem with the word biometrics. And yet, if you actually look at the history of biometrics and eugenics, they come from the same source. Francis Galton was the founder of the eugenics field of study, and also the founder of the organized scientific study of biometrics, and was the first person looking at fingerprints as a means of identification. And we have to identify those strands as being completely interconnected, that biometrics was originally really nothing other than an extension of eugenics so that we could identify the lower classes that needed to be eliminated from the gene pool. And we have to understand that biometrics is also a threat to our existence in the way eugenics is.
Exactly. And what you bring up, I mean, it is basically data lust. It is a case of, taking yourself, James, it is a case of the system wants as many biometric markers of you as possible to basically feed into a database. And then the question then becomes of, once we have all your biometric markers, we have your DNA, we basically have your internal biometrics, we then are utilizing functional MRI, which is, brain scanning with covert beams of light actually being beamed into your brain basically to map your mind. And to read your intentions, and then we fully sequence your genome, where to from there? So, the whole case of the Trojan horse of, we're going to kill cancer, we're going to kill multiple sclerosis. I've been hearing that since I was a child, and it's never come to be. It never will be. And, there's a lot more experts in the field in regards to natural medicine and the whole, big pharma industry. There will be no cure for cancer. I mean, it's quite obvious how the pharmaceutical industry works. So the question is, once they do get the genome mapping down to, let's say, $100, and then government, just like it is now, where there is a cost associated to it. So when you look at the UK, the national card and the like, one of the major stumbling blocks is always been the cost to the government. So once these technologies actually come down in price, and then you have full genome sequencing come down to, let's say it is $100, you will actually see that governments will then basically start trumpeting that as being the, the holy grail of biometric markers, and it's bulletproof and the like. So, to the people that can see, it's just it's a game of just musical chairs, and we're just moving down the line, till eventually all the biometric markers will fail. And it'll be a beautifully orchestrated event where, something will go wrong on a large scale, whether it's a 9/11 or the like. And then what they'll say is, look, the only way we can basically, secure the populace is to embed them with a microchip with the bimodal biometric attached to that, whether it's your iris scan and your fingerprint or all three that are combined. And then that will obviously be tied into a payment system, which VeriPay has as well, and called VeriPay. And then once you actually start linking that into the financial system, and that can easily be seen of where that's moving, where the UK just recently announced last week that all business checks and even personal checks will actually stop being used in 2018. And then if you start coupling that with where, ATMs are basically moving, where even in India, you basically have, I think it was about 10, I can't remember the amount, but 10 to 15,000 ATMs that are actually being built in India will basically be built as biometric ATMs. So, people can see where it's going if you want to see where it's going. That's the point. If you're just taking it as a snapshot from a daily perspective, it just looks like progress, It just looks like progress.
Right. And I guess perhaps even we're not the target audience for this indoctrination. It could be the youth who are indoctrinated into this step by step by step, so that each step looks just like it's so natural to them that they can't see that there was a time before this was part of the system. And that's to me, one of the scariest things. You identify an absolutely key way in which this strategy moves forward here, which is that they will attempt to set things up to fail, specifically to fail. Things are designed to fail in a certain way so that they can then institute whatever system they're looking towards instituting. So it happens time and again in field after field, but I was just listening to a Peace Revolution podcast by Richard Grove, and he was talking about hemp. Hemp is the perfect solution to global warming. If you believe that carbon dioxide is truly driving climate, then the answer would be to switch to hemp as a fuel source. And you would eliminate all of the problems that we're having today with burning hydrocarbons into the atmosphere. Assuming that's really killing the Earth, that would be the logical solution. But that's not the solution they want. They don't want an actual solution. Exactly.
They never want the solution. That's the whole point. It is
exactly.
It is a game. I mean, what people need to realize is we are dealing with professional liars. I mean, these guys have absolutely. And you know, I'm one of those guys where I'm an optimist. I always look at the glass is always half full for me. But I look at it now. We have all levels of government from the lower end to the top end to the lobbyists. The world has been infiltrated from all fields, whether you look at it from the agricultural field to farming to natural medicine to, I mean, you name it, every industry is under total assault and for total control. So that what people need to also realize is that there is this agenda, and it seems to have an octopus tentacle basically in all fields, and humanity has been crushed. It is as simple as that. And you know, the only thing, I mean, for me, I mean, I'll look at it from a perspective of where my sanity comes is the fact that I do know the truth. I do know where this is going, and for me that gives me just the clarity for the day. And sometimes it's quite comical, you know, to see where it's all going. You have to laugh.
You do. You have to laugh. Yeah, exactly. You have to laugh at it, certainly not with it. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. Well, we've explored the ways in which the DNA databases are being introduced as a biometric marker, but of course there could be other nefarious purposes for such databases. And I think specifically, of course, it's presented to us in terms of medical breakthroughs and the fact that we may be able to cure cancer and cure these diseases and things. But of course, the flip side of that, and I think the more likely thing to develop, is of course, what is the first thing that technology is always used for is for the military and for weaponry. So if we're looking at how the genome, the human genome, mapping the genome, can be used as a form of weaponry, what are we really looking at in that regard?
I mean, regardless of, you know, how you bring that up, there seems to be this drive to basically, and like you said, it's masked in this genomic science where we can basically, if we can identify all the bad genes, we can then basically start offering, you know, to couples, for example, that are having, you know, children and the like, that we can then create the next generation to have good genes. So what you'll find is it's a case of it'll be a sword that some people will truly, you know, take it up simply because they have the money and the resources to pay for, you know, what's called, you know, tailored, whether it's tailored vaccines or personalized medicine. The question then becomes is, once you have actually fully mapped the genome, and then you have companies like IBM, which basically utilize, you know, their blue gene processes to create variations and seeing how, you know, whether it's drugs or whether it's viruses actually react with the genome, you can quite easily see a military industrial complex, you know, project at play, where you can actually then start targeting people based on their genome. So when you have companies, as mentioned, with IBM, who obviously worked hand in hand with the Nazi regime in regards to the Hollerith tabulating machine, which basically aided the Nazi regime in actually, you know, data locating through the census and the like of the non-compliant races, you then have the same company, IBM, which is basically releasing, you know, the DNA array machine. So the companies behind this, you know, whether you call it the eugenics program or the new genomic science, I can tell you their agendas would not have changed. I mean, they're multinational companies. They answer to no one. They are immortal, basically. They only answer to the stock market. And at the end of the day, to more money, more power, and, you know, monetizing human life, basically. So, as you say, once the genome is mapped, it only becomes natural, especially with what we're hearing that, you know, the world is overpopulated, it can't sustain itself, you know, we're a burden to the earth. And then, you know, you have, you know, the vice minister of, I think it was family planning from China, basically, you know, starting to say that we need to start adopting the one child policy as what China does. And then you roll it up into the whole, you know, climate change and, you know, global warming, whatever they, you know, they're moving with now. You can actually see that this is a multifaceted approach, and could easily become a military industrial complex, and depopulation can actually occur through it. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking specifically in terms of race-specific bioweapons, which, of course, was specifically mentioned by name in the Rebuilding America's Defenses report from the PNAC, the Project for New American Century, in September 2000, which specifically talked about making race-specific bioweapons a politically useful tool. And, of course, this isn't just a theoretical, I would assume, at this point. In 1998, of course, the Sunday Times reported that Israel had been developing ethno-bombs to use against Arab populations, and there was some controversy over that story, and eventually I think it was moved away from, but it was never really cleared up where the sources for that story had come from. And then, as Wikipedia will tell you, and please don't trust Wikipedia, but at any rate, as Wikipedia will tell you, there's a Russian newspaper, Kommersant, which was reporting in May of 2007 that the Russian government has banned all exports of human biosamples based on a secret FSB report about ongoing development of genetic bioweapons targeting Russian population by Western institutions. So there is certainly the idea floating around, at any rate, that this could be used as the ultimate weapon.
And that's exactly the point. I mean, what people need to realize is the whole compartmentalized approach where, you know, funding is released to universities and then the university basically, you know, takes the idea into market, which is then taken up by a multinational company, which is quite often seeded by the military-industrial complex. It is always the same way of actually bringing the idea to market. And bringing the idea to market is generally to just give the average populace a distorted view of what the actual agenda is. And it is always cloaked in the same Trojan horse, which is, you know, to defeat illness, prevent, you know, future disabilities, bring world peace, harmony, and all these carrots that are basically floated forward towards the donkey. So, you know, to those who can see how the marketing agenda is played, it's as obvious as the nose in your face. But what we also need to understand is, you know, the general populace out there sometimes can't see it. They really can't. And they just take it on hand that, you know, these corporations wouldn't lie to them and the government truly is there to serve them.
That's right. That's extremely important to point out, because there are lots of projects out there that people may not really consciously be thinking about what they're really giving up in order to participate in them. And I'm thinking about one that National Geographic was running about mapping your genome. Yeah. So maybe you can get into some of those types of examples where it seems like such a great idea to give the corporation your DNA.
It does. And look, you know, you could actually send through your DNA anonymously. And what people need to see is, you know, Dr. Spencer Wells, who is actually the brainchild behind the genographic project, And IBM actually tried to pull the project off, which was basically to, you know, they said it's to map the migratory patterns of the world's population. So the indigenous populations of, you know, of Africa, North America, and actually even in Australia, they basically said, look, this is something that we do not want to participate in. It is a platform for eugenics. And at the end of the day, we can actually be discriminated against. I mean, for example, if, you know, if your genome shows that you're 10% native, you know, history has shown that no, you know, original owner of the land in imperialism has ever really benefited. So, you know, like you said, you know, eugenics, the word itself, it has just basically, the word itself has just morphed into something else. And, you know, whether you want to call it genomic science or DNA mapping or whatever, the fact is that the platform remains the same. So what I found comical about the IBM and National Geographic Alliance is, you know, I'm seeing National Geographic actually getting now more involved in far outside their target market. I mean, when you actually look at the last cover of National Geographic, they were actually promoting the merger of man into machine. And there's also been some other articles over the last 6 months to a year where they've promoted, you know, the surveillance society and really promoted CCTV to be this, you know, the one-stop solution that will, you know, stop crime and, you know, we will all live in world peace and terror will subside and the like. So that'll be actually be one of my smaller projects where, you know, who is National Geographic really? That's the question we need to ask, because the current projects that they're taking to market for their reader goes far beyond the scope of what National Geographic should actually be focusing on. And when you see them teaming up with, you know, at the end of the day, Nazi war criminals, which is IBM, and people need to be aware that when you're looking at IBM, you're basically are looking at a company that is guilty of war atrocities. And, you know, many nations and many people have actually sued IBM, but nothing has come of it because, as Edwin Black actually mentioned, who was the author of IBM and the Holocaust, is IBM is larger than nations. They are a titanic multinational company, and as we're moving into this, you know, this global grid with, you know, the Internet of Things and the smart grid, which is obviously being promoted through climate change and the like, IBM is one of the few companies that can actually pull off this agenda where governments start relying on these tech giants to basically pull the smart grid into place. So you can say that IBM actually does operate, you know, not only with governments, but to the point that governments are totally reliant on IBM technology.
Oh, but Greg, come on. That was the past, and now IBM is a wonderful corporation that only cares about people, and they want to map the human genome and participate in the Human Genome Project because they love us so much and want to tell us where we're
right.
from.
And I mean, I really want to know how my family migrated from, you know, from Greece and over to Australia and this is the point. This is the point. I mean, what are people giving up? I mean, you're sending your DNA to a company that is guilty of war crimes. And what do? They give you, what, a flowchart of where, you know, grandfather Nicoletis had migrated from. I don't know whether I've got Italian blood in me. I don't know. But, I mean, what is the payoff? But this is the point. IBM wasn't silly enough to go into market as IBM. That they hid behind National Geographic, and National Geographic, to the average person out there, you know, is a defender of, you know, the animals and the species, and, you know, they do good work, and, you know, and their publication is a good read. So, you know, if that doesn't set alarm bells off that a company basically has to hide behind another company to basically take your genome or your DNA to map your genome, that should send alarm bells ringing. But as you mentioned, James, in this day and age, people don't have that much time. So, all you need to really do is just scratch through the veneer, and you'll quite often find the monster in the closet.
That's right. It's really remarkable and kind of a sad statement about where we are as a society, that they really don't have to hide that much. It's so out in the open what they're doing, and yet so few people are really willing to go and do that peeling off of the veneer. And that could be because they're too lazy, or they've been programmed not to go there, or because they're genuinely afraid of what they'll find, which I think is another factor in all of this. But I guess that brings us to the question of how do we stop the implementation of this agenda, or how do we at least derail this agenda from going forward in the way they want it to go forward? And I'm thinking in terms of what do we need to do? Do we need some sort of organized, nonviolent refusal to give DNA, like a Gandhian resistance movement? Or what do you envision is a way of derailing this agenda?
Well, I've often played this out, if it occurred to me, I would simply refuse to give my DNA on a personal belief system and just see where that plays out. And at the very least, that would give our movement some more publicity. But that's me personally. So the question where I have a real annoyance is the police and the law enforcement that is there to serve us. At the end of the day, they are public servants, and they have taken oaths to basically serve the public. I would really like to see some active campaigns of, where are the police these days? Where are their heads at, to the point where they are basically just pirates on the road collecting revenue for, a corporation, which most states in America, you can prove, are corporations, as all of the Australian states are, and they have gone from serving the public to basically being pirates that basically create a revenue stream off the general populace. So I do think how to actually derail it. It is a case of having enough people that have got the balls at the end of the day to say, look, I draw the line in the sand here, and I'm not saying go to jail for your belief system, because if you go to jail, they'll take your DNA off you anyway. But I certainly do think that there is a window of opportunity where you can test the framework right now and see where it leads, and whether it's you're writing letters to your your parliament members or to your government and the like. The fact is, when nothing gets done, that is when their agendas come through. What I have noticed is, as we're trying to get some legislation put forward through in Australia, we have found some good people within government, and quite often they do not want to alienate themselves from their peers. But, agendas such as microchipping, and if you can actually showcase the gradual slide that, we're on. I'll give you a real case example of in Australia there is a company called Night Keys, and it works very closely with nightclubs, where to actually enter the nightclub you need to give your fingerprint, and then roughly, I think it's about 20 seconds of video footage, along with, a still photo as well. So we're then moving to bimodal, biometrics as well. And this is just to enter into a nightclub. And, you're basically are giving your rights, to this corporation. So anyway, so what I did is I contacted the corporation, and, we went through, who are the patent holders, and it became clearly evident that after we actually spoke to the gentleman who owned the company Night Keys, that he was just a front man. So we then started scratching further and further, and then all of a sudden, what did we find? We found, here it is, the military industrial complex. It is a company in America called Crossmatch, who actually does the biometrics for the Afghani and for the American troops that are in Iraq and Afghanistan. So what I say is a general rule of thumb, when you are looking at biometric technology, it is the military-industrial complex. You're not going to find, Walmart basically selling biometric technology. It'll always come from the military-industrial complex. So to go around the question, James, what people need to do is take an active role. But for me, where I get truly concerned is when you actually see kids that are, 18 to 25-year-old or whatever they are going into the nightclub and just handing over their biometrics to enter into a nightclub, which, they're not getting free drinks. They're just entering the nightclub. It just turns my stomach. It just amazes me. It absolutely amazes me of the level of conditioning that must be out there where, I'm not affected by it, but if one looks at the real-world case of what is actually happening and the adoption and the embracement of handing over your biometrics, it turns my stomach.
Absolutely. I think much, much scarier in some ways than the Big Brother police state coming in and taking your DNA is the idea that people are being conditioned to willingly and happily give it up without even thinking about it. So that is a absolutely frightening and horrific part of all of this. And we have to help educate people to really break them and out of that conditioning, because it certainly is conditioning that they're being indoctrinated with. And we have to provide the elixir of truth that will hopefully wake them up from that. Greg, just an incredible conversation as always. Are there any points on this sort of web of interrelated subjects that we haven't talked about today that you wanted to get to?
Yeah, I mean, excuse me. What you'll find as well is where this this genome mapping is actually moving. What you'll see is they'll start now mapping the full genome. I think just in the last month you've had the mapping of the Tasmanian salmon and panda bears and all these animals and all these plants. And what will happen is once the genome is actually fully sequenced, what will then happen is basically that's where Big Pharma then moves in and says, look, we can now basically bring a Tasmanian salmon to market that has no spots or the flesh is more tender. So the point behind this is to take everything that has been created in nature and to basically move it into a lab perversion, if you like. And we've seen that once, genomes are actually sequenced and the like, the owner of the actual patent or the company that has actually sequenced the genome, and let's say that particular product goes into production, whether it's, through transgenics or through manufacturing, utilizing various technologies, the fact is nature then has been hijacked by corporations to the point that the food chain can actually then become hijacked 100%, as we obviously have seen, with Monsanto and the like. So what we're seeing in the agricultural world will now start extending itself into actual species as well. Whether it's fish or chicken. There was one article out there which, they were saying that they could actually produce chicken basically, without utilizing chickens just through stem cells and the like. So, and once again, how that is brought to market is we need to feed the poor. There's Africans that are starving. So, when I read stuff like that, it's just such an old and tiring marketing ploy, but it works for them. That's the point. It works because the average person out there doesn't actually think that they're being continually lied to by professional liars, and not only professional liars, guys that have got degrees in it, basically.
That's right. That's right. That's a key point, is the ownership of one's DNA, because I guess at a certain level it becomes a question of, do you own your own DNA? And there have been cases I know in America and other places where people have gone for gene therapy and have discovered that they do not own their own genes and DNA that have been patented by corporations in order to provide gene therapy. Just remarkable things like that really I just can't really enter into the framework of an average person living their average daily life who just can't contemplate that these types of things are taking place. But you're right, it does go back to corporations being granted the ability to get patents in the U.S. Patent Office over genetically engineered life forms that goes back to the 1970s. And that was a key moment at which actual living things could be patented by corporations, and that does mark a horrifying shift in our society, and the ramifications of that are only now beginning to become apparent. But as you say, Monsanto and things like that lead down that road, and that's a terrifying path to be on. So I guess the ownership of our DNA is another key part of this puzzle.
Exactly. I mean, and look, we can take it one step further. I mean, we can discuss this, and I'm not no expert in the field, but what I encourage the listeners to also research is transgenics, where you're basically also injecting, you know, genetic material from animals into human cells. So in theory, you have the possibility of actually creating humans, and their parents are rats. And it might sound ridiculous, but that's where the field of science has gone. It is a case of you have got these new overlords and these new gods, who are the gods of science, and they basically are pushing the boundaries of what is possible, that goes far beyond, you know, whether one takes the, I believe, in evolution or creation. Transgenics totally breaks the mold. I mean, we're basically then forcing DNA material from, you know, various from species into another species, you know, through the injection of the genetic material. So that has spawned the name, which is actually called, you know, chimera research. So when you look at, and myself being Greek, what it, you know, they call it chimera or chimera, or however you want to pronounce it, was basically, you know, a fire-breathing female monster. I think it was with a lion's head and a goat's body. So, you know, if you look at Greek mythology, it's telling you that this isn't good. I mean, this is whether you want to use the word an abomination. How can anything good come of this? That's the point.
That's right. And aside from the yuck factor, which is an important part of it, I'm not dismissing that by any means, but there are valid and very, very disturbing scientific details that come out from these transgenic hybrids, including the creation of proteins, random and spontaneous creation of proteins that have never existed before on this planet, mm-hmm. that are being created in this process, and all sorts of things, problems with the process itself, and how they use viral markers to mark the fact that the genes have transplanted successfully, which in and of themselves may be causing the next wave of super resistant bacteria, and all sorts of incredible things. And I have talked about this on the podcast before, but I need to talk about it at more length because it is a very, very, very key issue at this moment in time. As is so many of these things that are happening on the technological front. And I really don't know how to wrap up a conversation like this, because I don't think there is an adequate way to summarize what we're talking about here, but do you have any ideas?
No, all I can say is just everyone should just do their part, regardless of how minimal you might think that what you're doing, whether it's on Facebook and emailing, you know, news around or whatever, creating, you know, your own groups and the like, because this is a burden that needs to be shared. If you can see what's happening, there is a responsibility on you. So, that's all. It's and many hands make light work. The fact is the other side is working tirelessly against you. So you have to work tirelessly against them.
That's well said. That's a good point. And on that note, I think we're going to have to get you back on again and again and again and again in the future to keep going over this, because there's just too much to possibly cover. But once again,
thanks,
Greg Michalotos, it's been a pleasure, and truly thank you very much for all the work you're doing over at We the People Will Not Be Chipped.
I appreciate your work as well.
All right, excellent. Well, you take care, and have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
You too. Merry Christmas, and prosperous New Year. But
thank you very much.
What's coming down the line, that we can hope. Thanks, mate. Bye, James.